This is Hampton Roads Topics. Good morning, I'm Jim Long, and welcome to this Community Affairs segment for Hampton Roads. Find out details about the show and download the latest podcast at the program website, hamptonroadstopics.blogspot.com. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Joel Brenner of Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters. He's a specialist on sports concussions in children, which is our topic today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I realize as I say that I'm really understating your role and your specialty in sports concussions. In fact, you're the director of the CHKD Sports Concussion Program, the director of sports medicine and adolescent medicine with CHKD. You work with local, middle, and high schools as well as colleges on this issue. You have testified before Congress about sports concussions in children. So you're not an authority. You could say you're the authority on this. I welcome you to the program, and thank you. I know you're a busy man, so thanks for joining us on the program today.
My pleasure.
All that said, let's talk about how much of an issue sports concussions are with children these days.
I think it's a major issue. As we know, it's become more common that we see it in the media. There are almost 4 million sports-related concussions a year, according to the CDC, and that probably is an underestimation. A lot of the concussions occur in recreational sports. There's more young athletes playing recreational sports mm-hmm. than high school and middle school sports. So there are some that go unrecognized, but it's unfortunately becoming more recognized and more common. I think some of it is because it's more recognized mm-hmm. That it's coming into my office.
So because we are understanding it better, we're seeing more reports of concussions in sports from children, in other words.
Right. It's being reported more because people are being more educated about mm-hmm. it instead of just kind of saying, well, this is just kind of just a bump on the head. But I think there are more kids playing sports, both organized and unorganized, and so that maybe leading to higher rate of concussions also.
And to put that in perspective, you mentioned about your practice here locally. You've said that you see a dozen new sports concussion cases a week in your office?
On average, especially. Uh-huh. Some weeks are busier than that. It really depends on the season, but yes.
Okay. And so we have a sense now as to how prevalent sports concussions are in middle, high school age athletes. But let's talk about then why that's a concern. So let's start with what is a concussion then?
So a concussion is a brain injury.
Okay.
That's really one of the most important points. It's a brain injury that occurs from some type of traumatic force, and it can be a force to the head or even a force to the body that causes the brain to shake into the skull, and it causes a functional problem in the brain. So if you think of an egg, and the outside shell is actually the skull, and you shake that egg, so the yolk inside is getting shaken up, but the outside looks okay. So it's a problem actually with how the brain functions. We also try to relate it to, if we relate it to computers, it's more of a software problem instead of a hardware problem. So your skull is the hardware, and inside your brain, the neurons and the electrical activity is the software, and it's the software that gets disrupted.
Okay. So it can be likely due to a direct contact, but maybe you also said it could be indirect. It could be a blow to the body that causes the brain to shake in the skull.
Right, right. If you get hit in the chest or if you are some type of jolt and your mm-hmm. your head goes back and forth,
okay.
and that causes the brain to shake.
So like a car accident.
For instance, a car mm-hmm. accident, or if you're on the soccer field and you bump in with another person. And a lot of times it's a rotational force where your head actually kind of spins on itself, so it doesn't have to be back and forth, too.
Okay, and what is the effect of this blow that causes the brain to be rattled, so to speak?
Right. So when this force happens and it causes the injury to the brain, there's a metabolic crisis that goes on. There's shifts in sodium, potassium, and glucose, and it causes a problem with how the brain functions, mm-hmm. and it causes a lot of different symptoms. Symptoms vary. The most common symptom is a headache, but you don't
right.
have to have a headache to have a concussion.
Okay.
A lot of times people feel dizzy. They just don't feel right. They feel kind of foggy. They feel kind of out of it. They also don't have to lose consciousness. Less than 10% of the people with a concussion ever lose any consciousness. And I would say in my practice, and I see people from very mild to very severe brain injuries from concussions, and I would say less than 10% of the people I see have any loss of consciousness. And if they do, it's very brief.
Okay. And now the effect then is this something that you can recover from, the concussion symptoms you're talking about?
For the most part, most people do recover well.
For the most part.
For the most part. Okay. Now, there's no 100% guarantee, even after one concussion, that you're going to recover back to where you were before. And the risk of this recovery going down increases with each concussion you have. So most people and most young athletes recover back to where they were before the concussion. It does take a period of time. What we know is young athletes actually take longer than older athletes. So about 40% are better within a week. 80% are better in 3 weeks. But that means 20%, one in five, take longer than 3 weeks to get better. And unfortunately, there's some young athletes who take a year or more. Unfortunately, I've got some athletes who 2 years afterwards are still trying to recover from the effects of their concussion.
This is Hampton Roast Topics. My guest on the program today is Dr. Joel Brenner. We're talking about the effect of a concussion on children who play sport. Well, in any kind of concussion. It could be sports-related, it could be non-sports-related. It could be just somebody who fell off a bicycle who gets a concussion. Are these effects then cumulative? Does one concussion followed by another concussion, is that worse than just having the one?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, there's some people who just have one concussion who still have difficulties recovering all the way back.
Okay.
We do know that once you do have one concussion, you're at high risk for getting another concussion with less of a force. We don't know how long that risk lasts for, whether it's for a month or 2 months or for a year. And then it's thought that possibly, you know, your second, your third, maybe your fourth, if you get one, might be worse, but that's not always the case. And every concussion, even in the same individual, is different. Sometimes the second concussion is worse than their third.
Okay. Well, I guess part of what you have dealt with over the past couple of years in your expertise on this issue is in developing guidelines for knowing what a concussion is, how to recognize it, how to treat it, and then when it's okay for the student-athlete to then return to the team and resume playing. So how do we know when it's okay for an athlete who's had a concussion to go back to the playing field?
That's a great question. And you know, at this time, there's some things that that we have to look for. And some of it was put forth by the Virginia concussion law that Senator Northam had put forth that went into effect a year ago. First and foremost, the athlete has to be completely symptom-free. So they need to be back to feeling the way they were before the concussion occurred. They need to have a completely normal neurologic exam. They need to have complete normal balance exam. And then some type of neurocognitive or neuropsychological test showing that the brain function is also normal too. Then they need to meet those four criteria. At that point, then they have to go through a gradual exercise progression program. That's a minimum of 5 days. Sometimes it needs to be longer. Through that program, and each step is about at least 24 hours. Through that program, they go from light exercise to more moderate exercise, heavy exercise, and then into contact collision practice. If they remain symptom-free each step of the way and they're still completely back to where they were, then and only then should they go back to an actual live contact.
And you said this is the state guideline now. Is that
so? That is actually the guidelines put forth by the American Academy of Pediatrics, other national organizations, but it's also within the state law.
Okay.
So the state law said they came up with general guidelines and then put it out to each of the individual schools to come up with their specific guidelines.
Okay. So there's a set of criteria to go by before a student athlete can be cleared to go back to the playing field.
Exactly.
That's assuming, though, that they have actually been diagnosed with a concussion. Mm-hmm. Are there guidelines on that as well if there's an injury involved with the athlete?
So, yeah, in terms of diagnosing the concussion, some of it is it needs to be recognized. And so one of the things that we try to do is educate the coaches, the parents, and the athletes. Unfortunately, you know, throughout the country, only 40% of the high schools actually have a certified athletic trainer.
Okay.
So there's not always going to be an athletic trainer or a healthcare provider out there There might be a team physician out there to help out. But the coach, especially in the recreational sports, the coach has to be able to recognize the signs and symptoms of a concussion. And if they recognize that, then they need to be pulled out and then evaluated by a healthcare provider.
Okay.
And the CDC has a lot of good tools mm-hmm. for coaches and for physicians and for parents of how to recognize a concussion with the whole signs and symptoms, too.
Right. Now, the guidelines you discussed earlier about when to recognize, when it's okay for the student-athlete to go back in,
mm-hmm.
these apply to school sports. Do they also apply to recreational sporting activities?
So the state law at this point in time does not apply to recreational sports, but the guidelines set forth by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the other national organizations, the National Athletic Training Association, those are clinical guidelines that should be followed by everybody,
mm-hmm.
whether they're in a school sport or not. The hope is that in the future, and some states have already done this, where they've included recreational sports in the state laws, since more young athletes play recreational sports than actually high school or middle school sports.
Okay. These guidelines that you helped write, the guidelines that are in place in Chesapeake,
mm-hmm.
Your colleague, State Senator Ralph Northam, who's also a neurologist at CHKD, helped to craft the statewide guidelines. These did not come easily, did they? The process followed, you're talking about decades of misconceptions about concussions and what causes them, what they can do. You mentioned the phrase earlier, having your bell rung.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoons we grew up with where people, one blow to the head causes amnesia, the second blow to the head cures amnesia. I mean, these are things that you doctors have been having to deal with for generations now.
Yeah.
Where are we right now in our public awareness and acceptance of concussion as a real problem?
It definitely has changed quite a bit. Uh-huh. You know, when I started about 15 years or so ago, we treated concussions a lot differently. At that point in time, the standard was if that athlete was feeling better and they seemed to be okay within 20, 30 minutes, they could go back to play. That no longer is the case, whether it's from professional sports all the way down to recreational sports. So people have recognized that a little bit more that this is a brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
People still will minimize it at times. When I see them in the office, I ask them if they've ever had a concussion or a brain injury. And luckily, a lot of times they say no, but I also ask them if they ever got their bell rung or a ding to their head.
Okay.
And they will say many times that they have. And when we kind of go through that history there, those dings to their head or their bell rung actually might be a concussion that was unrecognized. So we've made progress. We still have more progress to go. I think Senator Northam did a great job kind of working with all his colleagues up in the Senate to get this passed. But, we still have room to go from an educational and a treatment standpoint.
And part of that cultural battle, if you will, that you've had to wage on this front, it would include the notion that there's something noble about an athlete who's been hurt on the field to come back off of the sideline and get back into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you contend with today, that notion of you're hurt, but you're willing to come back in and put it on the line?
Oh, we still see that.
I mean,
we hear about that when we're watching the highlights the next day after football games. And even today in the NFL, you still have players who say, well, I'm just not going to tell anybody. So we have people, the young athletes, who will tell us the same thing, or who will try to, you know, they don't want to let their team down. The point is that they need to understand is it's different if they've injured their ankle or their knee and it hurts, and maybe they can try to continue to play. But we're talking about their brain and a brain mm-hmm. injury. So devastating consequences can happen if they have a concussion and they go back into play and they get another concussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that long term. What do we know about concussions over time, and say they've been hurt as a child, as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And you said earlier, Joel, that the young brain takes longer to recover than an adult brain from concussion. What do we know about the long-term effects of a concussion, say 10, 20 years down the road?
Unfortunately, we don't know all the answers about long-term effects. What we've been learning, there's a couple consequences that we are trying to prevent. From a long-term standpoint, one is post-concussion syndrome, which has many definitions, but just in general, it's when the concussion symptoms last longer than might be expected. So they might be having headaches and problems concentrating for a month, 2 months, 6 months, and that might take a year, or it might never get better.
Okay.
But the other things that we're learning are chronic brain changes. We're seeing this from autopsies that are being done not only in ex-professional athletes, 40 and 50-year-olds, where they see a protein called tau protein that's deposited in the brain. And so these brains look like someone who's 80 who has dementia, but these are only 40-year-olds.
Okay.
Now, they've also done autopsies, though, on a 17 and an 18-year-old who also have these chronic changes. So it's not just the older people. And the thought, more current thought, is that it's not just the concussions that were diagnosed, but it's also the repetitive subconcussive blows that might cause these chronic changes. So right now, we think everything's okay in these young athletes who are better, who've gone through these guidelines. We don't know for sure what's going to be in 6 to 10 years after they've had two or three. We do know there are some studies that show young athletes who have had three concussions might have problems and have a higher risk of problems in terms of their memory and concentration down the road.
You know, hearing you talking about that, Joel, I'm sparked with the memory of, we've had two former NFL players in recent months take their own lives and have left notes for their families to donate their bodies to science so that scientists can study the effects of their game that they played as a living on their bodies. Mm-hmm. What is your reaction to the recent suicides of Junior Seau and Dave Duerson, two former NFL All-Pros?
Right. It really highlights the concern and the severity of this crisis, really. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that points out, and that a lot of times people forget, and that we see and we talk about, at least with my patients, is we need to look at the mental health aspect of concussions. There is a higher risk of depression and anxiety with people who've had concussions.
Mm.
There are people who, unfortunately, have suicidal thoughts or have tried to commit suicide or who actually have succeeded. And these are young athletes, not just the professional athletes that we see on the news. So that's something that every parent, every coach, people who are dealing with athletes with concussions need to be on the lookout for signs of depression, anxiety, stress, and other concerns.
Again, underscoring the importance of recognizing, understanding what concussions are and what they can lead to down the road if you don't take the steps to deal with them right now. My guest in the program today, again, is Dr. Joel Brenner from Children's Hospital, the King's Daughters, talking about the effects of sports concussions on children. Let's spend some time then talking about, we've established the severity of the issue here, so let's talk about them preventing these concussions, starting with the idea as to what sports you can see concussions in. We assume football is part of this conversation. Football and what else?
So football gets a lot of the publicity because there's, all these fantastic highlights of hits and everything, but it's so much more than just football. I've seen a concussion almost in every single sport. I've seen it in sailors and skateboarders, but we see it, football has the highest rate. Girls soccer has the second highest rate right now.
I wrote to ask you about soccer. What the players are trained to head the ball, and so is soccer an issue when it comes to concussions?
So soccer is definitely an issue.
Yeah.
And in the two sports where it's very common, soccer and basketball, and boys and girls play, the girls actually have a higher rate of concussions in those two sports than the boys.
Okay.
From a soccer standpoint, though, it's not so much heading the ball. The concussions we usually see are from head hitting goalpost, head-to-head, or head-to-ground. So if someone is going up to head the ball by themselves and they know how to head properly, we think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of the thoughts is, though, that maybe we should decrease the amount of time in practice of heading the ball because of these concerns about repetitive head blows. But it's really more, we definitely see it more from just more aggressive play and from the mechanisms that I just mentioned.
Okay. You said soccer. You said basketball. You can get concussions in basketball.
Exactly. Uh-huh. We see it in baseball. We see it cheerleading. I probably saw more cheerleaders this year than I did football players in the office. We see it in field hockey, in girls lacrosse, boys lacrosse, probably more in girls lacrosse than boys lacrosse. again, it goes through really the whole spectrum, even in, you know, divers in the pool. Okay. Definitely less of a risk.
Okay.
And, you know, there's no way we're going to prevent every single concussion. Some of these are accidents, but we can lower the risk of concussion.
Okay. How do we do that then?
So
there's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I had the complete answer with that. So from a preventing a concussion, and we can't do it all, but some of it is technique.
Okay.
You know, from learning how to properly play your sport. From soccer, learning how to properly head the ball. And if you've got someone, if you're going up to head the ball and someone else is right there, maybe you shouldn't go up and fight that person to head the ball. Now, you're not always going to be able to prevent it. Or in football, you know, Pop Warner just came out with their new rules just 2 weeks ago, limiting the amount of contact and collision in practice. And, you know, that's really important to limit how much contact collision young athletes have. It's not required.
Okay.
I was telling you earlier, Nick Saban spoke at our Pop Warner Medical Advisory meeting just 2 weeks ago. And, you know, he's the coach of a small school down south who's done pretty well.
Alabama, you know, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And he does not have his players do tackle and contact every single day from a concussion or other injury standpoint, yet they still do very well. So that really needs to translate down to the high schools and to the recreational sports.
That should speak volumes when you have a championship-level college football coach saying that he doesn't do full contact in every meeting. Pop Warner, when you talk about Pop Warner, that's football for elementary age. Is that about
so
right?
So Pop Warner Little Scholars is actually, it's football. They also do dance and cheerleading, but it's from 5 years of age up to 16.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Equipment-wise, you mentioned that, though. Is this are there improvements that can be made without singling out football specifically, but football helmets? Are the things we can do to make them better, to make them better preventing at concussions?
The most important things with football helmets is that they are properly fitted, that they are either new or reconditioned and meet the national standards of where they should be, that they wear them properly. The other important thing to understand, though, is that football helmets do not prevent concussions. They have helped considerably from skull fractures and from other injuries, intracranial bleeding, but not necessarily from a concussion. What's also has helped, though, is the technique of not leading with your head. So, you know, having the proper helmet's helpful. One of the things they're using helmets now for research and looking at sensors for how much hitting is going on.
Okay.
But the other thing that always comes up is about soccer and soccer headgear. And from the research right now, soccer headgear that's out there does not prevent concussions.
Yeah, explain that, would you, please? We always hear about wearing our helmet, football, riding a bicycle, riding a skateboard. You're saying it doesn't necessarily prevent a concussion, though.
Right. I definitely recommend whenever you're riding a bike, you wear a helmet.
Okay.
If you're playing football, you wear the proper equipment, including a helmet. But it doesn't prevent a concussion. It can prevent skull fractures. It can prevent other traumatic brain injuries. It can prevent death. So it's really important.
Okay.
But it's not necessarily going to prevent a concussion.
So if I read that correctly, then a blow to the head is a blow to the head, regardless of the helmet being there.
Right. And one of the reasons is a lot of times the concussion is from a rotational force. So your head kind of gets spun around on its axis. And the helmet is not really preventing that. So one of the things people are actually looking at is strengthening the neck. So neck strengthening programs are becoming more popular to try to help stabilize the head a little bit better.
Wow. Okay. And so once again, I'm speaking today with Dr. Joel Brenner from Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters about concussions in school-age children, and especially when it comes to sports. And again, he does recommend wearing the helmet. Cycling, skateboarding, and you probably see people who have had injuries from skateboarding and cycling. What do you say to them when they come in and they've fallen off their bicycle and they've hit their head, or they've fallen while skateboarding? How do you then handle them as a patient from here on out?
So from a concussion standpoint, we still go through the same guidelines and manage them the same way we would any other athlete, dealing with their symptoms, giving their brain a chance to rest. The treatment for concussion really is rest in the brain, rest in the body. If we go back to the definition of a concussion, where there's basically an energy crisis. And so if someone with a concussion was to go out and go running or go biking or playing soccer, you know, that's using up the brain's energy. They're going to feel worse, and they're going to it's going to delay their recovery. Same with if they're trying to do schoolwork and think, a lot of times that can make it worse. So initially we need to rest the brain, rest the body, and it's an individualized plan.
Okay.
And then once they get better, you know, if they're just recreationally riding their bike, we still kind of follow them along. Once we think that they're better, mm-hmm. we still put them through a little progression program. Because a lot of sometimes the symptoms will come back once they start to exercise.
Really? Okay.
And so that's what we're looking for, to see if any of the symptoms come back. And then once we send them back, if they're riding a bike, if they were skateboarding, really need to recommend to them that they always wear proper equipment, including mm-hmm. a helmet. And we also recommend to the parents to set a good example and be good role models to always wear a bike helmet when they're biking around. Either with their kids or even without their kids.
All right, so if I hear you correctly, then you're actually telling your patients to slow down the thinking process while the brain heals.
Exactly.
And physical activity, you say you ease them back into that. Is it something as basic as jogging, mm-hmm. could that jar the brain a little bit and hinder recovery?
So it's not so much the jarring of the brain as they're uh-huh. jogging. It's uh-huh. actually just the exertion that they're putting forth. So it's using up the brain's energy. So for some young athletes, just walking around their block with their dog or with their family, that's too much for them. And so they need to be able to walk first, and if they can walk okay, then they can uh-huh. start doing some light jogging.
Okay.
If they're okay with that, some running, then they can do some weightlifting and then other sport-specific skills. But it needs to be a stepwise approach.
I'm still getting the concept in my head as to what a concussion is. I would always envision it as like a bruise mm-hmm. on the brain. But the way you describe it, it makes it sound like there's been a power interruption that you have to allow time for the power to come fully back online. Is that
it's a pretty good analogy there. It's, you know, it's not a bruise. It's nothing we can see on a CAT scan or an MRI. So if you get evaluated and you have a CAT scan and they tell you that that's normal, that only tells us you didn't have any bleeding in the brain, no skull fractures. Doesn't say anything at all about a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely, it's an energy problem. Like you said, it's, you know, it's kind of like your TV got hit by lightning and it needs to kind of reset and put everything back into balance.
Okay, so we have time for just one more question here. If your child has had a blow to the head of any sort, what should you do? Should you call a doctor right away?
So if they've had a blow to the head, you really need to check them out, evaluate them, see how they're feeling. Obviously, the first thing you want to do is make sure that they're breathing, kind of mm-hmm. ABCs, and if everything's okay with that, then knowing kind of the signs and symptoms of a concussion, that's where either going to the CDC website or our website is helpful. If you have any concerns at all, though, if they have a headache, if they're just not acting right, or if they've lost consciousness, then you should either contact your physician, or, you know, if it feels like it's an emergency, you have any concerns, then going in the emergency room. Now, every person with a concussion does not need to go to the emergency room, though.
Okay.
So, you know, I think if it seems like it's not an emergency, life and death right away, contacting your physician first would probably be the best. But you really have to use your personal judgment, and that's why it's important for everyone to be educated about this.
Okay, so you can go, as he said, to the CDC's website, which is cdc.org, CHKD's website, which is chkd.org, if I have that correct, for details about how to recognize the signs of concussion and what you can do to help in the recovery from one. Mm-hmm. And that's all the time we have on today's program. My guest again, Dr. Joel Brenner from Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters. And thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
And that's all the time we have for today's edition of Hampton Roast Topics. You can download podcasts of this show and other interviews from the show's website, hamptonroasttopics.blogspot.com. I'm Jim Long. Thanks for listening. I'll see you here on the radio next Sunday morning.